You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Let's go!
No,
let's go!
Let's go!
Let's go!
Let's go!
Hello, and welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm the editor at AllYouCanHeat.com, and with me on the other line, it's the man of many bylines. It's David Ramil. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, man, this is great. I'm feeling wonderful. You know, the season is nigh upon us, and we're getting the opportunity to talk to a lot of our friends across the Locked On NBA podcast community, and this is a great start to a great week for us.
Yeah, today we're going to talk with Philip Rossman-Reich of Locked On Magic. So we'll be previewing the Orlando Magic, and then later in the week we'll be previewing we got the Chicago Bulls, the Charlotte Hornets, and the Atlanta Hawks coming up, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Some of our, you know, Eastern Conference competitors, some of the teams that we know that our listeners want to find out more about, they've undergone various changes, and they're going to be competing for a playoff spot along with the Miami Heat here in the Eastern Conference. So we wanted to get together, you know, kind of discuss what's happened during the offseason and what we can look forward to during the regular season as well.
So we'll have the Magic in a few more minutes, but first we have to talk about Josh Richardson and his partial MCL tear that he suffered last week during a workout. Reports saying that he's going to be out between 6 and 8 weeks.
Right.
What's your immediate reaction? How bad is this for the Heat, or should we temper our overreaction?
That's a tough one, right? I mean, as most of our listeners probably know, we had projected Richardson to be the opening day starter. You know, he's probably the most versatile, you know, option at two guard because of his defensive prowess, because of the way he was able to space the floor. Although we expect that Tyler Richardson can do a lot of the same things.
Tyler Johnson,
that can do a lot of the same things that Josh Richardson can do. You know, I think Josh is a little bit more familiar with what Spoelstra will expect of him and everything else. And, you know, it's just such a fluke injury. He was just going up for a dunk, came down wrong, and felt something in his knee. And at first, a lot of Heat fans expected, or a lot of reports came out saying that, you know, surgery is going to be required. He could miss a number of months, 6 to 8 weeks. That's a little bit more optimistic. And, you know, I think that's a longer prognosis than many of us expect. I think, you know, a guy like Richardson, who's still young, will probably try and force the issue a little bit. You know, I had mentioned this to you that when I talked to Richardson last season, towards the end of the season, and, you know, looking forward to the playoffs and everything else, I asked him how he was holding up under the rigors of the regular 82-game season. A lot of players talk about how you're constantly injured. And he kind of just, like, you know, clucked his lips a little bit and was like, nah, me? I'm 23. I have no injury issues. You know, nothing to be worried about whatsoever. And although I don't want to say this is karma in any way, shape, or form, it's just unfortunate because I think a lot of people were expecting good things out of Richardson, and you just hope for a speedy recovery. So we'll just have to see what happens next.
It might not be karma, but it sure looks like karma. yeah, you know, I think if you go with the 8-week prognosis, that puts him in about 2 weeks into the regular season where he would start. I think that this team, there's no rush to get him on the court ASAP. You know what I mean? He's still a young guy. This team is a young team with maybe not very high realistic expectations, or really just in general, it's the start of the season. So I think we could be looking maybe 9 or 10 weeks going into the regular season, because there's no reason for him to be as soon as he's cleared, get onto the court. You know, it's not playoff basketball. It's going to be the first month of the regular season. So I think the toughest part about it is he doesn't get to compete in training camp. He doesn't get to compete in preseason. So for a team that's looking to replace Dwayne Wade, they're not really, and as you and I have talked about, we expect Richardson to get slotted into that starting role. We're not going to get a sense of what this team could be in training camp or in the preseason because Richardson's not going to be able to start. He's not going to be able to play at all. So with that, this team doesn't really have probably its biggest part of the formula in replacing Wade. So you're going to be relying on guys like Tyler Johnson, Deion Waiters, Wayne Ellington now could get some more playing time, probably will get more playing time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how the starting lineup is affected. I don't really think it's all that important. I think we have a way of zeroing in on that. Like I said, I think the biggest problem with this is that he doesn't get to practice with the team, and this team doesn't get to gel with Richardson in it. But with that said, and we've seen Eric Spoelstra try to maintain rotations, and by doing that, we'll start like a deep bench guy, and that could be Wayne Ellington. I mean, you know, you could start Ellington. He can still duplicate what Richardson can do from beyond the arc. Not even close to what Richardson could do defensively, but at least provide some spacing and some three-point shooting, and then continue to bring guys like Tyler Johnson and Deion Waiters off the bench. I don't think that's going to happen, but it's a possibility.
No, it's a really interesting one, because you're right. I have seen that, you know, he's leapt ahead of other more obvious choices and started a guy like, say, James Jones or something like that. So it does make sense because, yeah, I mean, you don't want to disrupt the rhythm of the guys who will eventually be coming off the bench to replace Richardson if eventually he makes it to the starting role.
And it's practice for Eric Spoelstra, too. I mean, this is a guy who's dealing with basically a turned-over roster with no veterans. He's got to figure out what kind of lineups he wants to play. So even for Eric Spoelstra's sake of trying to figure out how he's going to stagger these minutes when Richardson comes back, having Ellington as the Richardson sub in his lineup rotations, that allows him to maintain and figure out some rotations that might work for him.
Yeah, that's an interesting possibility there. Maybe we should break down the other two options, which I guess would probably be either Tyler or Deion Waiters. And I think, I would expect Deion Waiters to start over Tyler. I think he's probably a little bit more capable at this point, although he might not necessarily be as familiar with the Heat system, or certainly he hasn't played alongside Goran Dragic the way Tyler Johnson has. I think he's a better defender overall. I mean, I think a lot of Heat fans kind of, I don't know if they overinflate or if you're hyping it up too much, but they kind of think of Tyler Johnson as being a superb defender. And I'm not sure that he really is, because I think he's out of position sometimes, and then, you know, he's a little undersized for his position. I think Deion Waiters is a better option, although he can't space the floor as well as Tyler Johnson. So that might be an issue. What do you think? What are the strengths and weaknesses of having Deion Waiters as a starter?
Well, I think as Waiters as a starter, you free him up to a certain extent. And if the Heat really want to try to figure out what they have in Deion Waiters, this is a really good time to figure it out.
It could be scary, though, right? I mean, it's fun to watch, if nothing else, but it could be frightening as hell.
That's Deion Waiters in a nutshell, right? Which
absolutely.
So I also like Deion Waiters' ability to kind of move around defensively. I think that in the playoffs last year, while it's a small sample size, he showed that he could be a really strong defender in that Spurs series for the Thunder. And so he does mimic a little bit of what Richardson can do as far as guarding twos and threes, shooting guards and small forwards. And so I like Waiters in that, and I'm with you. I think Tyler Johnson, while he's a very willing and eager defender, I think that his size could be an issue as far as versatility. I think he's more of a guy that defends ones and twos, while Waiters is more probably a guy that could defend ones through threes.
Yeah, I think he even guarded Draymond Green at some point in the playoffs, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Waiters is definitely strong for his size. And I like the idea of throwing Waiters the starting job. In general, I like Tyler Johnson as a backup combo forward anyway. I mean, this is a guy who really, like, got paid based on the spark that he provides to the team. So I just think, in general, there's nothing wrong with being a career reserve. I mean, this guy could be Miami's sixth man the Heat's sixth man of the year, so to speak.
Our version of Jamal Crawford, perhaps.
Exactly. So, and that's a really, really valuable position to have. I mean, we see guys get paid like that all the time and provide huge boosts to their teams and add, like, some interesting lineup combinations, as you see with, like, an Andre Iguodala in Golden State. But, yeah, I think Waiters is the guy. And I think anything to usher in the Waiters era in Miami a little bit quicker, I think you got to do it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, Spoelstra will probably try and spin it positively, as he's wont to do. I think that's just what a coach is supposed to say publicly. But at the same time, you're right. I mean, it does give him the opportunity to kind of test out different players, see what you have in them. And perhaps that's too much of a silver lining, but I think that's what you have to do. You have to look somewhat positively at it and hope that you can get something out of it. You know, later on in the season, when you're going to rely on guys like Waiters and Johnson and Ellington, possibly if he gets more minutes, he's going to get more playing time regardless, I think, because he does have an elite skill that a lot of players on the roster do not have, which is his perimeter shooting. So he's going to get some more significant playing time, and that benefits the team overall when you get that experience early on in the season. If you can use it at points, you know, when it's much more crucial, if you're in the middle of a playoff run or something like that, you know, you're hunting a playoff spot, you're going to need to fall back on some experience and familiarity. So there is that positive to come out of the injury. It's an unfortunate thing, but in some cases, in some ways, we can look at it as being a possibly a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, well, if you're expulsion, you definitely have to look at it that way, right? So, I mean, yeah. All in all, it's not that big of a deal, right? It doesn't look to be right now. It's a partially torn MCL, a sprained MCL, whatever you want to call it. It's not an ACL, thank goodness. It's not.
Right.
And we've seen guys bounce back from MCLs. That's not really the issue. It might be, you know, a month, maybe a little bit less going into the regular season that we're dealing with a Josh Richardson injury. But after that, everything should be good. And this core of Richardson, Whiteside, and Winslow, they get along really well. They've played together, obviously. So as far as that chemistry, it's probably not going to be that big of an issue anyway. So we'll be covering the Josh Richardson injury as we get updates throughout the podcast. But for now, let's turn it over to our conversation with Philip Rossman-Reich of Locked On Magic.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico, expect great savings and a whole lot more.
And this year feels kind of odd because I don't think anyone expects no one's like ready to say the Magic or the Heat are going to make the playoffs for sure this year. What are your guys' feelings? I know I've talked a lot about how the Magic are kind of in this weird transition mode and trying to become more relevant and hit, you know, no one knows what they're going to be. How are you guys feeling about the Heat's chances so far?
What was that stat you brought up earlier before we started recording? That was a good stat.
I was looking this up because I thought it was longer, but the last time the Magic or the Heat didn't make the playoffs was 2015. There's been at least one Florida NBA team in the playoffs I'm saying this completely wrong. There's only been 4 years since the Magic came into the league in 1990 where neither the Magic nor the Heat were in the playoffs.
That's pretty wild. That speaks a lot to like the consistency of both teams.
Yes. It speaks a lot to how much people want to come play in Florida.
Well, I know David and I, we've been doing this series about the top five players at each position in Heat history. And a lot of what keeps coming up is how the Heat, like there was the first few years that were really bad, but overall, relative to other franchises, they kind of achieved and then like sustained some sort of success or like playoff relevancy pretty quickly. You look at like a team like the Bobcats turned Hornets or like, you know, New Orleans, the New Orleans franchise or whatever, like these franchises that have
look at Minnesota.
Minnesota, yeah, that have basically been created and had never are still like just going through rebuilds and you know, quote unquote expansion type years. But like both the Heat and the Magic are kind of like they got on the scene and like immediately started getting to business in like a good way.
Yeah, I think a lot of that in Miami in particular has a lot to do with, you know, Pat Riley coming in here in 95 and only missing the playoffs since he joined the team 21 years ago. I think they've missed it, four times during his tenure here. So, I mean, and there was some playoff success beforehand, if you can count at least making the playoffs. That was the big thing, you know, during those early years pre-Riley. Orlando certainly had a few different, you know, iterations of the team that have been able to guide them into the postseason. So that's, you know, clearly, I think maybe you're right. Maybe there is something about players wanting to play here in Florida and, you know, this kind of success that the environment brings out in its players.
Yeah, and obviously the Magic, you know, as we've seen in the documentary that I've talked about God knows how many times, you know, Shaquille O'Neal obviously changes the franchise's fortunes. You know, they've always been able to – huh?
The Shaq and Penny documentary?
Yes, that would be the one, this Magic moment. Shaq obviously changed everything for the Magic, and the Magic have always been very, very good about finding another star. They went from Shaq to Penny, skipped a year, went to T-Mac, then straight to Dwight Howard. They've always had a star. And I think what's really been interesting about the last 4 years in Magic history is they undertook this massive rebuild, which they've never had to do. They've always kind of gone for the quick fix. And now they've tried to do this massive rebuild. They haven't been able to find that star. And, you know, it may surprise you guys about this, but the Magic, the 4 year playoff drought that the Magic are in right now is tied for the longest playoff drought in team history with the first 4 years of the franchise. So I think there's a lot of pressure to make the playoffs this year. And that at least partially explains, I'm sure, some of the questions you'll have about what the Magic did this summer.
Well, no, let's get into that, because, I mean, you say that the team's lacking a superstar, but they've made several changes. Why don't you break down for our listeners a little bit more about what's happened in Orlando and what you can expect out of the team this year?
Well, if you haven't heard, quite a bit happened in Orlando this offseason. It all started. I'll spin you a yarn here. It all started when Scott Skiles resigned quite suddenly. At the beginning of the summer, the Magic went out and hired Frank Vogel, which I think has been universally praised. I mean, I know I had people telling me the Magic should fire Skiles to go hire Vogel once the Pacers announced they weren't going to renew Vogel's deal. But then after that, things seemed to get stranger in some sense. But also, if you think about some things through it, it does make a little bit of sense what the Magic are gambling on, at least. They went out and traded Victor Oladipo along with their first-round pick Domantas Sabonis for Serge Ibaka. They went out and signed Bismack Biyombo to add more rim protection and front court help. They re-signed Evan Fournier. They added some veterans like DJ Augustin and Jeff Green in free agency. And they really transformed the roster. And a lot of people, certainly national media, have asked, you know, what are the Magic doing? This really doesn't make sense. And there's certainly parts of it that don't make as much sense. I do wonder whether Bismack Biyombo and Serge Ibaka don't duplicate each other's skills. I question whether Aaron Gordon playing the three is the right decision. But at the end of the day, I think it's pretty clear the Magic are betting that defense is their ticket to the playoffs. Like I said, they missed the playoffs the last 4 years. There's tremendous pressure to make the playoffs this year. And they know that last year, 10 of the top 11 teams in defensive rating made the playoffs. The only team that didn't was Utah Jazz. And I think a lot of people would probably recognize they would have made the playoffs if not for late season injuries to guys like Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors. They were on track and they're favored to get into the playoffs this year out West. But the Magic know defense is how you get in, and you can figure things out from there. If you have a strong defense, you have a good chance. And so I think the Magic are banking on that to get into the playoffs. And that's really what drove all their decisions, from hiring Vogel, from getting Ibaka, for signing a Biyombo, to even moving Aaron Gordon to the three more permanently. They're trying to establish an identity that they've been missing for the last 4 years. And so they made a lot of changes this summer. There's a lot of questions about whether guys can step into roles. I certainly have a lot of questions myself, but we'll see what they end up doing and how it ends up coming down in a couple weeks here.
I think the Vogel addition is I think of everything that they did between Ibaka and Biyombo and you know, trading Oladipo, I think Frank Vogel being the head coach is going to make the biggest difference, only because you're going from probably the worst coaching situation in the league, or one of them, the last few years, to having, at the very least, at the very worst, an above average head coach, right? And so just that difference between, like, absolute garbage, and I don't want to, like, diss Scott Skiles and Jacques Vaughn all that much, but there was no real proof that any, like, they even really existed during games, or that they were even there. And now you have Frank Vogel, who's so much, he's a real coach. He does, like, game plans and stuff like that, which is, like, amazing. And it's going to be the first time Magic have anything like that since Stan Van Gundy. I think that's going to make a huge difference. Like, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say that he's probably worth 10 wins. I think the difference between what it was and what they have now is that big.
Yeah, I don't think you're necessarily wrong on that point. You know, Jacques Vaughn was a babysitter, yes. Nice guy, you know, but he was there to babysit a team that was losing on purpose.
That dude was like, for lack of a better term, Angelou or something, like, in his introductory press conference. I remember.
Yeah, I think, like, he did.
That was, it was some sort of some poet. I was like, what is this? Like, I was at that press conference covering it when I lived in Orlando. And I was like, about Jacques Vaughn, because he came from the Spurs. I'm like, this has to be good. And then I walked out of that press conference like, who the hell is this guy?
I like when they hired Jacques Vaughn, I was like, he's there to get you to the guy. And
yeah,
you know, when they finally asked him to start winning games, he couldn't do it. And you know, you bring in Skiles, and Skiles has his track record, and you know, the Skiles effect kicked in 2 years before the Magic expected it to, and they got pretty much got saved from themselves, because, you know, as much as Skiles was a problem, they did improve by 10 wins with Scott Skiles at the helm. And I agree. I think Vogel's worth at least 5 or 6 wins on his own. I wasn't against bringing back much of the same roster with some added veterans and Frank Vogel in the mix to see if that group could take another step. But obviously the Magic felt a little bit more pressure. They went out and got some players that were a bit more of a sure thing, I think, and moved on from some other players. It wasn't just a summer of change in Orlando, though. I know it was a summer of change in Miami as well. Did, you know, talk a little bit about what the Heat did this summer, and obviously the elephant in the room. Did what happened with Dwayne Wade surprise you?
Well, that's a big question there. I think it starts off with Pat Riley's plan, as always, as he indicated in his end of season press conference. If there's a whale out there to be had, he's going to go and try and find one. And so he was, you know, representing one of 6 teams that was able to, you know, meet with Kevin Durant when he became the best available free agent this season. And although that seemed like a far-fetched plan, there was hope in Heat Nation that he'd actually somehow try and convince Durant to come to the team. But of course, that never worked out the way Riley or most of those fans expected him to. So from there, it was a quick shift in policy, and several veterans decided to leave the team, most notably Luol Deng, who signed with the Los Angeles Lakers. Joe Johnson, who had come midway through last season, signed with the Utah Jazz. And of course, as you alluded to, Dwayne Wade, who chose to sign with the Chicago Bulls. Now, that was, you know, obviously a difficult moment there. A lot of Heat fans expected this to come down in Miami's favor at the last second, as it had over the last couple seasons. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case. And with Wade signing elsewhere, Miami kind of had to change their attack a little bit and wind up signing a number of veterans on short-term deals, not the least of which was Dion Waiters, who came here at the last second on a 1-1 type deal where he could possibly parlay his success in Miami to another contract in the future.
Durant was the best available free agent at the time, and I know that you said that because Dion Waiters was restricted at that time. Had he been unrestricted, Durant would have been the second.
Thank you. Okay, yeah, for the Magic fans listening to this, there's a love of Dion Waiters here. We were the people who created the idea that Waiters should join here when we started tweeting out Waiters Peninsula as an obvious destination point for him, and it worked.
We're not afraid to admit that we created social change.
Absolutely.
And as Magic fans know, Dion Waiters is a prime Magic killer. He's on the list of Magic killers in the league right now.
Yeah, he's going to be an NBA killer for the Heat.
So who else did we bring on board then? So we got Wayne Ellington for a 2-year, $12 million deal. We brought in Derek Williams from the New York Knicks. He signed here in a 1-year, $5 million deal. We got James Johnson, who was no longer a person of interest in Toronto, and we got him for a 1-year, $4 million deal. So we brought in all these veterans on short-term deals. We also got Luke Babbitt in a short-term trade with the New Orleans Hornets, yeah. Basically. Babbitt the Rabbit, as Wes has christened him. I'm not sure if the nickname will stick, and I'm not sure what kind of an impact Babbitt will have, but he's part of the team.
We got Waiters to sign Miami. We can get this one to stick, or I can. I don't know. I think I might be alone on that one. We also re-signed Tyler Johnson and Hassan Whiteside, obviously. So this team has really taken a different shape. The transition between the basketball that they're going to be playing from last year, what that's going to look like this year, I think is going to be so, so different. Just the way that they play, it's going to be a lot faster. I think they're going to be relying on trying to force some spacing and things like that. But, you know, obviously, and we'll probably get to this in a bit, but after Wade left, the question turned to what's going on with Chris Bosh. And we don't really know. I mean, I think the latest news is optimistic. You know, the latest news says that Chris Bosh expects to be cleared to play medically within the next few weeks, which is by far the most optimistic and hopeful thing we've heard in this entire saga, basically. So while everything kind of relies on Chris Bosh, the additions, I think, were underwhelming, other than Waiters.
Yeah, it certainly seems like this Heat team is as hard to peg as anyone else. You forgot to mention the most important offseason addition that the Heat made, and that is Summer League Hall of Famer Willie Reed. Obviously, Orlando Summer League fans are very familiar with the Hall of Famer and his work for many years in the Orlando Summer League. But
people are calling him the next Dwight Howard.
Really?
No.
And of course, he took Okoro White off the Magic Summer League team this year as well. Not that Summer League matters for anything. But I think it's really interesting looking at this Heat roster and trying to figure out how they're going to play. It's gonna be so different. And of course, they got a great coach in Eric Spoelstra, so I'm sure they'll play above their pay grade a little bit. But I think before maybe we get into Bosch, but like I think, and this maybe will tie into Bosch, but the East. Pretty much every team in the East outside of Brooklyn and Philadelphia believes they can make the playoffs this year. And I would imagine Miami has the same goal that Orlando does to make the playoffs this season, even with all the changes that have been made. What do you see in Miami that makes you believe that they're going to achieve that goal? And what could kind of turn it one way or the other?
I think the loss of Wade, as painful as it is, being the face of the franchise for 13 seasons, there is some hope there that the keys to the car will be turned over to Goran Dragic. And I think that's the case. I think Spoelstra has clearly said now Dragic gets the opportunity to lead the team. And that works out very well for Goran's strengths. He likes pushing the pace a lot. There were times last season and the half season before that when the Heat traded for him where there was clearly some friction there between Dwayne Wade and him, not necessarily friction of a personal nature, but just in styles of play. Goran wanted to push the pace. Dwayne was much more of a slow it down kind of guy, more of the old man game, which suited him as his athleticism declined in recent age. So I think with Dragic in charge there, I think we're going to see a new version of this team that we haven't seen in recent seasons, one that pushes the pace and that plays to the strengths of guys like Hassan Whiteside, Justice Winslow, and Josh Richardson, who was expected to be the starter before he underwent, an injury issue. We're not quite sure what's going to happen with him. He's sprained an MCL, from what I understand, and he'll be out for about 6 to 8 weeks, although no surgery is required. So we're not sure exactly how that's going to affect the starting lineup or who he's going to replace him. But clearly there are some pieces in play here that, are better suited to play at a fast pace. And I think that's where the strength of this Miami team is going to be moving forward.
I think just to jump on top of that, a lot of the issue with Miami last season was while they had great individuals, Joe Johnson, Wade, Luol Deng, Hassan Whiteside, Goran Dragic, none of them really, Chris Bosh for the first half of the season, but none of them really fit together. So it was a lot of, okay, your turn, okay, my turn type of deal. And while that's certainly enough to get to the playoffs, and it was, as we saw last year, I think that there is value, and there should be tangible value, into a team that just plays better together, or the pieces just fit a little bit better. And I think the way that this team projects, this team fits better together. So while they clearly are not going to be as good as they were last year, I don't think the drop is going to be as severe, just because you're getting a little additional value from a team that has more chemistry, at least from a skill standpoint. But right back at you, Philip, what do you think is the tipping point for the Magic this year? What has to break for everything to go right for them?
Yeah, I think what you're saying about the Heat is very similar to the Magic. They are going to be predicated on defense, like I said. I think that's their gamble, that if they can play elite-level defense, top 10 in the league, if not higher, that they'll be in the conversation and make a good push for the playoffs. I think we've seen it numerous times where, like the Charlotte Bobcats from a few years ago, they had one of the best defenses by defensive rating in the league and one of the worst offenses, and they made the playoffs. Yes, they got swept by the Heat, I think, in that series, but they were in the playoffs, and that's ultimately where the Magic want to go. But I think the big
could be that good though.
Huh?
Do you think Magic's defense could be that good?
That's where I have a little bit of doubt in them. I think Vogel's track record is really, really good. He's coached a lot of really good defensive teams. But I remember also that was the promise Scott Skiles made too. Everywhere he's gone, he's coached really good defensive teams. And the Magic last year were 17th in defensive rating. And unfortunately, and I think this is actually the big question the Magic will have to answer in the first month or so of the season, I think this is where we start to, you know, definitively say whether Nikola Vucevic is a starting center in this league. For the longest time, Magic fans have said to cover up Nikola Vucevic's defensive deficiencies, and he's better. He's continued to get better, but he's still not good enough. I think he gave up 52% at the rim last year, and it was down from 54, but 52 still not good enough. We've always said he needs a guy like Serge Ibaka next to him, and there's only so many of those rim-protecting fours who can guard out on the perimeter with so many stretch fours now. And so the Magic went out and got Serge Ibaka. And you can tell every time, like, Frank Vogel talks about Ibaka, that his eyes kind of light up. And he said, you know, I believe we can teach Vucevic how to anticipate and get in position better. And then you ask him about Ibaka, and you can just kind of see his countenance perk up a little bit, because Ibaka is, you know, as much as he struggled statistically last year, you saw in the playoffs just what a disruptor he can be defensively. And the question I still have about all that is, well, Vucevic isn't Steven Adams on defense, and right. And even you know, when Ibaka and Enes Kanter were together, Ibaka couldn't cover up all of Kanter's mistakes, and so. I think the big question and the big question the Magic have to answer almost immediately, because this whole season rests on having a great defense, because their offense is going to be very piecemeal. They don't have a true star. You know, Ibaka has never used more than 20% of possessions in his career. Evan Fournier took a big step next year. Can he take another one? Is Aaron Gordon going to be able to play the three? They don't have a lot of 3-point shooting. So how are they going to spread the floor? Nikola Vucevic is a reliable offensive player, but does his defense outweigh his offense for a team that needs to be elite defensively, not just good? The question then becomes, can you play defense with Nikola Vucevic as your center? And I'm a little bit skeptical, because I think one of the reasons Ibaka's defensive numbers went down so much is because so many more teams employ stretch fours. And Ibaka was pulled further and further away from the basket. I'd rather have Ibaka just planted in the paint at center than to have him guarding a four out on the perimeter and have to come in, recover, and then get back out to a potential shooter. And I think that could be a potential weakness in the Magic's defense that teams are going to try to exploit. And I think it's not using Ibaka the most effective way that they can. And so I think the Vucevic question is going to be a big one that finally has to get some definitive answer. And they've got Biombo now to put pressure on Vucevic as well. So they have a guy that maybe they feel comfortable starting now too, so that they can bring Vucevic off the bench and still use his offense.
Yeah, it's, you bring up Ibaka, and you know, obviously that was a pretty big trade completed, if I'm not mistaken, right on draft day.
They said they made the deal while they were on the clock, essentially.
Okay. And, you know, obviously there are ties between Rob Hennigan and Sam Presti in Oklahoma City. So that seems to make sense why that deal was done. But a lot of people, I think, across the country get the sense that Orlando was fleeced a little bit because, you know, Ibaka's on the last year of his deal. They gave up an awful lot to get him. I think Ersan Ilyasova was included in the deal along with a draft pick who wound up being Sabonis. And Oladipo, you know, clearly an athletic player. Still young, cheap, because he's still on his rookie deal, and he's on the last year of his deal as well. So there's a lot of potential there. So a lot of people felt that, you know, Orlando got the worst end of the deal. But, you know, I've covered a lot of Magic games with you, and although I think Oladipo is a great person and a fun interview, I don't know that he was necessarily as great as a lot of people make him out to be. What's your sense on the trade? Do you feel like Orlando got an even deal, or were they fleeced, as a lot of people suspect they were?
I mean, I think I'll say this. I think at the time I liked the deal in that the Magic weren't looking for another rookie. I think from probably about the trade deadline when they traded Tobias Harris, I was telling other reporters the Magic aren't using that draft pick. They're going to trade that draft pick. So I think they were looking to trade that pick no matter what. And Sabonis, I don't think really fit what the Magic were going to do. I'm not a huge Sabonis guy. I think he's a traditional four. So he's a bench player. A lot of people are high on Ersan Ilyasova, which I find kind of strange, because I wasn't particularly impressed with him during his stint with the Magic. But I think at the end of the day, the Magic kind of came to a head with Victor Oladipo, in that Oladipo was going to demand a max contract when he became a restricted free agent. the Magic weren't sure he was worth that max contract. And so they went out and got something that was a bit more of a sure thing. They know what Serge Ibaka is going to give them. They know that he gives them an identity. He fits a need that they have, that they need. He brings in a veteran voice, a guy who's been around a winning culture, and can hopefully lead and set the tone. And hopefully they can also give him the opportunity to showcase his game and prove that he's worth whatever the Magic are willing to pay him this summer. Because certainly you're right, with that expiring deal now, the Magic are probably going to be in the boat where if he plays well, they're going to have to give him money to justify trading away a young guy like Oladipo. But at the same time, Oladipo has had a lot of flaws. He never really turned into the star that the Magic needed. And so the Magic just went with a little bit more certainty, I think, than kind of seeing if Oladipo could spend another year trying to figure out if he's a star or not. And I don't think the Magic got fleeced. But having said that, after the Magic got Bismack Biyombo, I keep thinking to myself, the Magic really need a guy who can create off the dribble and kind of create his own offense. And Oladipo isn't perfect for that, but he was someone that would fit this team really well and help make them a little bit more complete. You know, you could run a lineup with Gordon and Biyombo kind of on the block. Gordon can help spread the floor a little bit. You have Fournier, who he's not a great defensive three, but you put a rim protector behind him, maybe he's a little bit better, and he's much better offensively as a three than a two. And then you have Oladipo, who can still kind of turn into a star and continue to improve his shot and kind of begin to hit those marks that you need him to hit. And so that part of it, with in light of what else happened this summer, it confused me a little bit more than it did at the time. I think at the time I liked the idea. I felt that the Magic needed to do something to shake things up. And as the summer went on, it was just like, well, seeing how these pieces fit is a little difficult to see at this point.
Personally, I love the trade for both sides. I think that we have a tendency to try to figure out who won or lost a trade like immediately after it happens. Sure. But I thought it made a lot of sense for both sides. I mean, you look from the Thunder, this is pre-Durant going to the Warriors, but even you know, after that happened, it still makes sense, I think, for the Thunder, because you looked at what Serge Ibaka was doing, and he plateaued in the situation he was in. I mean, you were talking about it earlier, how they made him play the stretch four position, they took him away from the rim, and, you know, with guys like Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant and all that, and, you know, they needed as much space in the paint as they could find. So having Ibaka planted in there just wasn't working. And then on defense, obviously, with the development of Steven Adams and Ibaka having to guard these new stretch fours, then, you know, it wasn't the right situation for him. And then on the same thing for Oladipo in Orlando, they were asking him to be the guy, and he just wasn't the guy. He's not a guy that was capable of being the number one or maybe even a number two option. You know, I don't think that's his role in the NBA. I look at Oladipo as, you know, a potential Andre Iguodala type, who certainly did that, but, you know, he did that at times early in his career. He made All-Star games, but, you know, as we saw with, you know, Iguodala in Golden State, he's best in this kind of situation where he can just kind of be a glue guy or a missing link type player who can help facilitate and handle the ball a little bit, shoot a little bit, and just do a couple of different things. And I really like Oladipo in Oklahoma City. I would have liked him a lot more if Durant was still there. But I really like that fit for Oklahoma City. So I think the fit is really good for both teams. And yeah, both guys are, you know, their contracts are coming up. But I do think that us as, you know, podcasters and bloggers and writers and everything, I think we tend to maybe look at that contract thing a little bit too much, because I think we have such a macro view of things in general, where I think these teams are basically saying, we have an 82-game season coming up, possibly longer if we make the playoffs. We need more better players, and we can get one right now. And so,
and they have their bird rights, so it's not right. Like they can't keep them. Like the bird rights thing is a big deal.
Yeah, and you know, Ibaka and Oladipo can make more money, you know, potentially if they stay with their respective team right now. The missing link to me for the Magic, though, with Oladipo gone, that makes a lot of space for Mario Hezonja. And I think that he didn't play a lot under Scott Skiles because Scott Skiles hated him.
Yes.
But now with the opportunity, you know, with Oladipo gone, I think that, you know, he can make a sophomore jump. I think that a lot of people are forgetting about him because he was so quiet his rookie season, and because that rookie class was so freaking good. But I think he has an opportunity right now. To me, he's one of the under the radar guys to watch this season because I think he could be really good. I think while Oladipo wasn't a star and he couldn't be a star, I think Hezonja could be a star player.
Yeah, and it's back to your point on Oladipo, I agree. I think that is a perfect fit. I was saying on draft night, Oladipo is going to play the Dion Waiters role better than Dion Waiters ever could for Oklahoma City. I mean, I know you guys are all aboard Waiters Island.
Waiters role. That's the thing. Dion Waiters is going to go to the Kobe Bryant role now. That's
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And Victor Oladipo can't do the Kobe Bryant role, but he can do the Dion Waiters role really well.
Yeah.
And even as a sidekick to Russell Westbrook, I think he's going to be really, really good. I think that is a really good role for him. But back to Hezonja. I think Hezonja had a lot of learning to do. I think there's this reputation that Hezonja is this really cocky guy. And, he's a kid. He's literally just a big kid. I took a video of him at Christmas Eve. The Magic had a practice and they didn't really have a practice. The coach's kids came and just kind of goofed off with the players. And while we were waiting for players to come out so we could ask them what their Christmas plans were, Hezonja was playing with some of the coach's kids and was just, literally playing with them, like just goofing off, having a good time. And that was the Mario Hezonja I kind of knew. And he knew he had a lot to learn. And I think Skiles kind of took the joy out of it. He taught him a lot and he did get better, but he kind of took a lot of the joy and confidence out of his game that made him so popular in the draft.
On people.
He does. And like at the end of the season, like we were all sitting there just like, let Hezonja make some mistakes, like let him off his leash a little bit. And he just never would let him off the leash. Like he had a game where he had 5 steals. And I think Skiles in his press conference after the game said, yeah, but he probably, 5 steals isn't necessarily a good thing. He probably missed a lot more and was out of position defensively. And it's just like Skiles is kind of backhanded compliments, like passive aggressiveness wasn't good for Hezonja. I don't know if he's quite there to become a star quite yet. At the Olympics, he was kind of still relegated to being a spot up shooter. And I think he played that role well, but he still got a little immaturity. Like his body language wasn't good. It definitely did not look like he was happy just kind of standing in the corner. Like he wanted to do more. And I think Vogel's going to let him do more. And I think that's going to really boost his career. I see Hezonja as the Magic sixth man. I think he's going to handle the ball a lot for the Magic this year. And I think his shooting numbers will bounce back. They weren't that impressive last year, but I think he'll get better, especially I think Vogel's just a better teacher than Skiles, probably less tough love, more more pats on the back, make your mistakes but learn from them, don't repeat them. I'm not going to pull you just because you make a mistake. And I think that was a big problem for a young player like Hezonja playing under Skiles. I mean, even Aaron Gordon, it took a while for Gordon to get Skiles' trust, and it was inconsistent then. I know Magic fans are definitely worried about Hezonja in comparison to the rest of his rookie class. Justice Winslow's a guy the Magic had their eye on that draft as well. What's in store for him his second year?
That's a good question. I think he's the one that everybody has their hopes pinned on as far as Heat fans are concerned, because with Wade's absence now, obviously he takes on a much larger role. And, you were there in Summer League along with us, and you heard from coaches. Although I don't think we ever saw clear evidence of this while he was playing, but apparently the role is for him to become much more of a playmaker. He was handling the ball a lot more than he ever did during his rookie season. But of course, as you pointed out, it's just summer league and it doesn't really matter. But apparently that's something that they want more from him. Although Goran Dragic is going to be obviously handling the ball a substantial amount, they want the ball in Winslow's hands and they want him to be more of a facilitator, much more of a somebody who gets the offense going, because his shooting is still a problem. Now, we've seen reports, I'm not sure how many of your listeners know about it, but Winslow's shooting was a real problem during his rookie season. He had defenders shagging off him considerably.
Payton.
Exactly. Yeah, he was a problem there. He's got a great first step. He's a hell of a defender, but, as far as his jumper is concerned, that needs a lot of work. But apparently he's been getting it during the offseason. He's had a shooting coach who's been working with him. And, of course, we're not sure exactly what the results of that will be, but everybody seems to be encouraged, as they so often are during the offseason. But I think that's the first step for him, is to kind of take that next step as a shooter, as an offensive facilitator, a playmaker. And then with a defender like him, there are so many different things that you can do, and he really gives the team a lot of versatility. As you probably remember, during the playoffs against Toronto, he played center when Hassan Whiteside was out. He's capable of guarding quicker perimeter players. He did a heck of a job in a, you know, during the regular season on guys like LeBron James and Paul George and others, Kevin Durant. There was a good stretch there where he was guarding some of the top scorers and players in the game, and he held his own very well. Even as just a reserve, he was able to come in there and infuse his own defensive identity there, and that was something that a lot of Heat fans took, you know, they appreciated and took notice of. And I think that's the next step for him, is to continue to develop that and continue, like I said, being a playmaker.
Yeah, I think with Winslow, you have a lot of the same questions you have with Aaron Gordon. Is he's got a lot of the right stuff. Like, he's a good facilitator. He's a really, really good defender. You know, the athletic potential is certainly there. But because shooting is so important in today's game, you know, if he doesn't have that, it can really, you know, limit his ceiling. But if he can become a good shooter, it really rounds out everything else and allows him the freedom to do all these other things. I think David's absolutely right when he says, you know, the Heat are going to expect him to handle the ball more. I think that's one way to counteract the lack of spacing that a Justice Winslow or even an Aaron Gordon. I mean, if the Magic could be using Aaron Gordon as a facilitator at times too, because when the guy has the ball, you still have to guard him to some respect if he's looking to pass it. You can't just let him, you know, have a wide open window to get a guy an assist or whatever it might be, or to take a shot even. But I think that's one way to counteract for both teams. One way to counteract maybe their lack of spacing or lack of shooting when one of those guys are in the game.
And Gordon said that Vogel has told him he wants him learning how to play pick and roll and being on the ball a lot more. And there's, you know, it being muscle watch season. There was some video of Aaron Gordon working on his ball handling and, you know, dribbling with tennis balls and, you know, doing all those ball handling drills that NBA players do.
I saw him live. I saw him live when Arizona played Cal out here. His last year in Arizona. Well, I don't know if he was on one.
He only had 1 year in Arizona.
Okay, so it was his first and his last year in Arizona. And when I saw him live, I was actually really impressed with his vision, because you can't really get a sense of it on TV all the time. But when, you know, in person, you can really see, like, okay, this is where this guy's looking, this is what he's facing, but he can really see all of his teammates. And I really thought that, I mean, as far as a ball handler, he wasn't great at Arizona, but you could definitely see that he had the touch or the feel to get guys the ball in scoring position. And I thought that was a really important part of Arizona's offense. And that was the year that they were, like, ranked number one for a long time. They lost that game to Cal. That was one of Aaron Gordon's worst games statistically. But that said, like, that was one of his worst games statistically of the season. But I still came away pretty impressed. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think, like, a big thing for Aaron this year was just staying healthy. Last year, I mean, his rookie year, he broke his foot about a month into the season. You know, he came back, was okay, but, you know, everyone knew he was a project. He had a long way to go. You know, were you at Summer League last year, David?
I was.
I mean,
he was
remember,
amazing. Yeah, he was
yeah,
amazing.
You remember
that
what
first
he looked
few
like
days
then.
There. Yeah, he I was mean, really impressive. Running the break, shooting from outside. He was the best player of the tournament through the first couple of days, and then yeah, all of a sudden it came to a crashing end. And yeah, it was terrible, because you know, he did look so dominant there, and you hoped that could translate into the regular season. Unfortunately, it never happened.
Yeah, and I mean, it never really happened, because he broke his jaw in July, and so he pretty much had to stop doing all basketball work. All he could do was kind of shoot set shots, and even when training camp began in September, he wasn't cleared for contact. So I know early on in training camp he was doing like the shooting drills and some of the other like physical drills, but he wasn't allowed to scrimmage. He wasn't allowed to do like live defense. And, you know, especially with a coach like Scott Skiles, who doesn't trust young players, it takes a while to gain that trust and get that comfort. And for a player like Aaron Gordon, who's just so raw, and like I literally say, he's a blank slate. He's kind of this unwritten book. He needs that experience and he needs that time to work and get better. And so, you know, when I saw how he, I mean, literally, I mean, David, you can attest to this too. Like, that summer league, we all of us, you know, who watched him all year, kind of looked at each other. We're like, who is this player that we're seeing right now? I, you know, that was just from the end of April to July. So that was 2 months of working on his own. So now he's had from the end of April to September, you know, that's 5 months to work on his game. So, you know, there is, you know, I guess some optimism that if he could make that big of a leap, you know, in that short amount of time as from his rookie to sophomore year, you know, having played pretty well to end his rookie year, to end his sophomore year, perhaps he can make another kind of big leap this year. And so, you know, I we were talking about this before we started recording, but, you know, Gordon could end up being that guy for the Magic, and we just don't know it yet because we haven't seen him play.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, I, you know, that brings up another player that I'm kind of curious about, and I'm sure you could probably discuss a little bit more, and that's Elfrid Payton. You know, he's at a critical point now. He's said in third year, but, you know, he's had his struggles, you know, not just as a shooter. He did have some issues with Skiles, whether or not they wanted to turn over the team to him and what kind of a role he could play with the Magic. How do you see him developing this season, and what's – how do you anticipate him being able to work alongside Vogel, you know, that in this new era? Yeah, it's been a short career for Payton. He's already had four head coaches. Vogel will be his fourth head coach. And he's at a really, you know, pivotal point in his short career. What's next for Elfrid Payton? How do the fans in Orlando feel about him? And what do you expect him to, how do you project for his development this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think Elfrid Payton is probably the biggest mystery on the Magic roster. You know, he had that great rookie year, and really, I mean, as bad as it seemed like Payton did, if you look at his at least production numbers, his points went up, his field goal shooting went up, his assists stayed kind of flat, but he seemed to take some steps forward. But where he took a major step back was defensively. And, right, you know, I've probably spent my entire summer telling everyone who will listen to me, the Magic have to be good defensively, and that has to start with Elfrid Payton. There's no getting around it. They have to get more from Payton on that end as kind of the point of attack. I mean, you talk about how bad Vucevic was. Payton was probably worse last year on the defensive end. Certainly defensive box plus minus suggests that too. But, you know, I think a new coach, a coach that maybe trusts him a little bit more, isn't going to ride him as hard, will help. But I do wonder, can Payton run an offense that's a motion-based offense? We don't really know what kind of offense Frank Vogel is going to run with this Magic team. During Summer League, it looked like they were running some Princeton and some motion sets, but that's obviously Summer League, so who knows how much of that they're actually going to install with the regular team. But if it's another motion-based offense and Payton's off the ball more, that does, you know, what's that going to do to his mindset? How's that going to affect his offense? Can the Magic get him involved in pick and rolls more to get him in the paint? Because once he's in the paint, he's really good at finding people, and the Magic need to make the defense collapse and rotate. And Payton is a really good weapon for that when he's on the ball. Obviously, he needs to become a better shooter. Vogel seems willing to let him shoot and wants him to shoot and wants to instill that confidence in him. And so that's a good sign. But I have some questions still about little things that Elfrid Payton has to do to run an offense that he didn't seem to get last year. And it's hard to really kind of name what they are. It's just kind of a feel thing. It just looked like he wasn't fully engaged with the team last year. And that's a major problem.
I think both of these teams have a lot of similarities. Both at point guard, can Dragic and Elfrid Payton take that next step? Can their respective teams get that return on investment that they were hoping for? Aaron Gordon and Justice Winslow, we already talked about, and their similarities. I think a lot of questions in the front court. Can Whiteside take that next step? Can Nikola Vucevic take a next step and round out his game as well? I mean, there's a lot of similarities here. Before we end this thing, though, let's just hypothetically, in a 7-game series between these two teams, let's just provide that Chris Bosh is healthy, because I think if he's not healthy, I don't think there's any way that the Heat would win a 7-game series against the Magic. But if he was, who do you think wins a 7-game series between the two teams?
If Bosh is healthy, I'm probably going to go I'm actually looking at this Heat roster for kind of the first time, but I probably go Heat in 7. Maybe whoever has home court wins it. I think you kind of have to go
best player. Hold on a second. Yeah, hold on a second, because I've been in Orlando during Heat games, and let me tell you,
good point.
That's not
good
much point. A home court advantage.
Good point.
Orlando.
Good point. The hypothetical home court, hypothetical home court for Orlando, but you
they,
know,
they play
whenever
a
you're,
neutral field in Orlando,
neutral court in Orlando.
Yeah,
I'll take the Heat. I'll go Heat in 7. I think if Bosh is healthy, he's the best player in the series. And, you know, there's always that adage, best if you have the best player in the series, you have a chance to win. I mean, that's how, you know, that's just kind of the way the league is. You know, one player can affect so much. And while the Magic do have Serge Ibaka and do have some guys who can defend Bosch, perhaps Bosch is a guy that can stir the drink, so to speak. A big thing that I've always said about the Magic is who's the straw that stirs the drink just to steal the Reggie Jackson line. And Bosch, when he's healthy, can be that guy. He is as much of a star as anyone, you know, he's as much of a star as any player that he'd have, as any player that would be in the series that we know of at this point. I think the Magic just have a lot of questions that they've got to answer about guys taking on new roles. That's Evan Fournier taking a step up too. That's Aaron Gordon figuring out who he is. That's even Elfrid Payton figuring out who he is. And, you know, I think Dragic is a really good point guard. I think he can fill in. He's a veteran. He knows what he's doing. The Heat have a lot of really good young guys. And, you know, Spoelstra and Vogel are two top coaches. And so I give the edge to the team with the better player. And I think that's Chris Bosh. And you know, if Bosh can come back anywhere near the effectiveness that we know he can be as a player, that's a star. That's an all-star player right there.
David, what do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, the Whiteside matchup is one that would be dominated by Miami there. I think he would be able to limit Vucevic somewhat. I think Ibaka would have his hands full at this point in his career with Chris Bosh, who's, you know, clearly a good perimeter shooter and still, as we anticipate, has the speed to get past a guy like Ibaka. I think the Gordon-Winslow matchup would be pretty good because although Gordon is a little taller than Winslow, I think Winslow's still strong enough to be able to restrict. I think Winslow's strong enough to restrict Gordon there. And I think, you know, it all depends on whether or not Josh Richardson can continue to develop also. So, you know, I think Evan Fournier is an underrated scorer. I mean, he's a hell of a shooter, as you know, Philip attested to, and you know, he's not a bad defender overall. So he's a really good player that has gone under the radar. But I like the matchup in Miami's favor. I'm not sure how you felt about him, Philip, but I think, you know, a lot of people across the country probably aren't aware of how good Josh Richardson can be. We saw a lot of that potential last season. We saw it during the playoffs, and you saw it up close in summer league, but I think he's expected to be a major part of this team moving forward. You know, he's a second round pick, so he's a great value there. But I think Heat fans are expecting a lot from him. So I if I had to pick, I'd say Heat in six, to be honest with you. Maybe I'm a little biased, although I do cover the Magic quite a bit, but I think the Miami team is just a little deeper, a little better at this point, especially if Chris Bosh is available.
I'd probably have to say the same thing. I mean, what really strikes me as interesting for both of these teams is that they could do some cool lineup stuff. Like for the Magic, I think there's a lot of interesting lineup stuff that they could do, with whether it be going small with Ibaka at the five or going big with, you know, Ibaka at the four, Biombo at the five, and then like Aaron Gordon, Evan Fournier, and Mario Hezonja, like rounding out the rest of that lineup.
If the Magic are going small, they could go Gordon at the five, I think.
Yeah, and that's what, and with the Heat, they could go with Winslow at the five. I mean, yeah. Obviously, I don't think it's ideal for either case, but both, you know, I know the Heat have done it. The Magic can do it. I think there's some cool stuff there. That said, I think that the Heat are a little bit more seasoned. I mean, their team is young, just like Orlando, but Richardson and Winslow were both in the playoffs last year. Whiteside has playoff experience. I think that matters for something. If this were a playoff series or whatever, I don't know what this series really is, but it was my question, so I should probably know. But
it's a theoretical battle for the state of Florida before we all sink underwater, I guess.
Yeah,
I won Bosch. Like if that was, I trust Bosch with that.
It's the NBA version and of waiters. The Wawa Sunshine Cup.
The battle of the pub sub. All right. Well, that's all the questions I think that I have. I mean, the only other thing I could think of was who has better hair between Elfrid Payton and Justice Winslow, if everybody wants to just take their pick.
Not even close. That's Payton in the landslide, I think.
That's Elfrid in four right there.
I'm gonna have to rep Justice Winslow. I don't know why, but I'm just gonna rep him. I feel bad. He can't get swept.
I mean, if you want a hair battle, Evan Fournier versus Justice Winslow perhaps is a little more competitive.
Yes. I mean, Elfrid has his own, like, don't they wear wigs to games? Don't fans like wear like Elfrid Payton
there
wigs?
There are fans that have Elfrid Payton wigs.
Yeah, see, I mean, if you have your own hairstyle, you know, as a wig, I think clearly you have the advantage there. I mean, if James Harden has his beard You know, and Anthony Davis has the eyebrows. I think clearly Peyton takes this battle.
Well, I don't disagree with you. I just can't let Winslow get swept. I'm a Heat fan. I can't let it happen. All right. Thanks for joining us, guys. This was a lot. This conversation was pretty fun. I like this. I think both teams might suck, and both teams might be pretty good.
Or both teams will probably be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect. All right. And that's our show for today. Big thanks to Philip of Locked On Magic for joining us. This has been Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us your mailbag questions, inquire about advertising, or just say hi. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.